Let's open with Kiddushin Daf Pei Amud Aleph. Let's return to Kiddushin Daf Pei Amud Aleph. Our old friend Kiddushin Daf Pei Amud Aleph, the Mishnah, the third parak of Taharas, which the Gemara quotes, Tinuk Shenimtza B'Tzada Isa, Rotzek B'Yadim. Rabbi Meir Metaher Chachamim Metamim. Mishnah explains just the drop. Doesn't say a word about Rabbi Meir, but explains Chachamim. B'pnei Shadarko Shel Tinok L'Tapeach. Because it's typical for the little child, for little children to touch things, to handle things, to experiment, to touch whatever they can get their hands on. In other words, the Rove indicates that the child touched the sheretz and the Isa, whichever one it is, which is not 100% clear, Machlokas Rashi Tosis. But the Rove indicates the child touched both, and in that case, the Isa is Tami. Reb Meir, enigmatically, is Matar. The Havina about my time is Reb Meir. So the Gemara records, Amaron, we're trying to figure out, so how could Reb Meir disagree? Because Reb Meir disputes the reason the Chum give, the doctor should tin the pech. Remeir thinks there's no rove, there's the machulkas and the tears. But as Yerushalmi, the beginning of Sechas Chala, tells us, Matthias is very important. So important that if you have a suffix in Matthias, in terms of general Matthias question, you ought to. Yeah, you ought to experiment, explore, investigate, and find out. How do you have machulkas and Matthias? Figure it out. Go to the lab, figure it out. Yerushalmi talks there about the opening Mishnah Chala, which has a machlokas, whether there are five halachic grains or six. Are there chameshes minidagan, or are there six minidagan? Yochan Benuri, the Tanya of Yochan Benuri, thinks that there's a sixth, and that's rice, orez. It usually translates rice. And the issue seems to center on which grains create chimitz. If it can be bali de chimot, so then it has a status, then it's roi for matzah, and by extension it qualifies as lechem, both in the context of matzah and in any other context that requires lechem, like birkas hamazon, like pasachim, and so forth. So Rishami says, well, I understand. So rov atanoim held that rice flour doesn't rise. If Yochanan Nuri held that rice flour doesn't really mean held. Look, go to the kitchen and try it. Make rice go and see what happens. Either it'll rise or won't. I have machlokas and metzias. That's what Yerushalmi says. We have masachas chav. I have machlokas and metzias. Look, find out. I have machlokas. What's the correct way to interpret a pasuk? There's no way to directly, empirically determine that. Machlokas and metzias. Experiment. The Yerushalmi says, well, they did experiment and they tried, but the results were indeterminate because it was sort of neither. It was something in between full chimutz and no chimutz. That was a machlokas, how you categorize that. Machlokas in shiurim, as a machlokas in tzitzis. So that's what the Gemara says here. Well, I don't understand. Chachamim said, Tomei, because Dr. Shatim Tepech. And what was Reb Meir think? He disagrees? He thinks ain't Dr. Shatim Tepech? The Gemara says, no, of course. Everyone knows. Everyone who's dealt with little children knows Dr. Shatim Tepech. There are exceptions, but that's the road. That's an unmistakable road. It's not a question of what the facts on the ground are. It's a question of how you deal with those facts. Again, Bahavim about my time is your mayor. Kasavar rope tinokos and top. And of course, he agrees most tinokos do touch whatever they can get their hands on. Miut ematav. And there's a minority of kids who are not so inclined. The east of the cheskatarimets. And the dough has the cheskas tahara. We know that until when you left the dough last, a couple of minutes ago, it was tahar. You left the room, you come back, and now we're not sure what transpired in the intervening minutes. So it has a cheskas tahara. Last time we knew for certain what its status was, the status quo ante is tahar. So samoch miyuto l'chazakir is le'ruba. So Mary says, well, put the chazaka, the miyut, of the miyut that some kids wouldn't touch it, alongside, shoulder to shoulder, with the chazaka that also says tahar, it's really ruba, and that weakens, that mitigates, that knocks out the rope. Rabbanan yuta kamandele sedami. Chachamim say no, ignore the miut. The mayor is saying, oh, the miut gets in the way. I mean, we add up miut plus chazaka outweighs him. Rob neh, the miut is a zero. So chazaka plus miut is chazaka plus zero. It's nothing. It's just plain chazaka. And therefore, all you have is rov versus chazaka, ruba chazaka, ruba ad. So when we first saw this Gemara, we said, the Gemara is internally challenging. So what's your mayor's svara, what's a chachamim's svara? I mean, put the mi'ed next to the chazaka, or you put the mi'ed next to the chazaka. It's not like a thing. Put the mi'ed next to the chazaka. What does it even mean? Chachamim say, no, the mi'ed doesn't exist. I mean, right? It's as though it doesn't exist. What do you mean it's as though it doesn't exist? Everyone agrees that whatever the numbers are, 80%, 90% of kids are mitapech, and 10, 20% are not mitapech. So what's the mayor saying? What's the chacham saying? What's going on? And we had originally said, let's put that aside, and let's instead look at the external questions. Of course, I'm going to be let's look at the external questions. How does the Gemara and Kiddushin, or the Mishnah that's third by the Taurus, which has a chachamim giving primacy to Rov, square with the Mishnah in the fifth barak of Taurus, Shnei Shvilin, which gives incredible power to Chazak. And we had seen over the last couple of days, Shimon develops the idea it's not about which one is strong, which one is weaker, it's that they're different. Rov and Chazak work in different ways. They may sometimes accomplish some of the goals. They'll tell us, they'll give us a practical way forward in terms of how to behave when there's a Safek in Metzias. They accomplish it in different ways. The mechanism is different. And that explains, we've seen a number of different Nachimim. Like we spoke about, let's put aside number one for a moment. We spoke about number two, the Shnei Shvilim. The fact that Chazak and Meikar can operate, at least in principle, welcome to the disaster. It's not really dealing with the underlying facts. So there's nothing illogical about working in paradoxical ways. Number three, we spoke about the fact that Chazak does not have to relate to the Shoresh HaSafik. Chazaka could be about, well, like here. Chazaka is not about what the actual substance is. Number four, we talk about Chazaka Shalom is Barra Veshaita, a weakness of Chazaka. Chazaka is limited to only operating, Tosa tells us in Chulon Yiral from and off the bottom. Chazaka can only operate if it's building off of not just what the known status was a year ago, but what we knew a year ago was a known status a year ago. You have to have known it at the time. Ex post facto chazaka doesn't work. Retroactive chazaka doesn't work. That's been nizbar of b'shaita. Why? Because after you're building off of not just, you know what the facts are, not about the facts. It's a hamashach hazah hanaga. We had a certain practice. We were acting a certain way, so we continue to act that way. So that's limited. The hanaga can be limited. In this case, it is limited to only continue to act now, assume now as you had assumed in the past. So you have to have assumed it in the past, and you can only assume it for now. It has to be nizbar of a shaita, that was not the number four, and it can't be predicting the future. Not the number five. And that was the Gemara, that was Rava's Teretz, hold a moment, that was Rava's Teretz on Chav Ches Amin Aleph and Gittin going on to Chav Ches Amin Beis, with which we ended yesterday. And where he explains that the Mishnah of Ches and Aleph and Gittin talks about Chezkas Chai, that in different areas of Halach with respect to Achilas Truma and with respect to Get. And what else did we have there? With respect to Korban, bringing Korban Chatzos, Korban Chatzos only brought if the owner is the Bailam are still alive. All those contexts, sorry, the Raisa contexts. The Mishnah says, if you know the fellow was alive, but he's not here right now, it's been a little while, you still have the right to assume, Cheskas Chai. Yet, I can't assume now that he will be alive in an hour from now. Like if the fellow sets up a get of love, in which he says to his wife, probably because of the specter of Zika, of Chalitza Yibam, which may create Igun, the man's about to die, he has no children, and he has a brother who's on the other side of the world. He has a brother who is a nasty person and wouldn't want to cooperate with Yibam Chalitza. Or he has a brother who would insist on doing Yibam, and neither he nor his wife want that. The brother is not the sort of person she wants to be married to. So out of love and caring for his wife, he says, I want to be married to you for as long as I'm alive. But I want to not be married to you the moment that I die, so that when I die, you're a grusha, not a lamana, and that way the zika of chalitza yibum won't kick in. So what does he do? So the trick he wants to pull is, I'm giving you a get now. You can give a get lachish to be chal lachers man. One can do a kinyan of kinyan mamnitz or kinyan sur dehetzer with a fuse. He says it should only be chal at a certain point in time. But here it defines it algebraically. Not it should be chal tomorrow. It should be chal next week, next year. It should be chal an hour before I die. X minus one. Moving target. When he dies. If it was an hour after he dies, we'll know when the time comes and the time came. But here, we don't know. You never know for sure. If he'll be dead an hour from now, then she's already mugureshes now. So there we don't say, chez kaz chai. Right away, we're like, oh, well, maybe he'll die in a half hour from now. So right away, she can't eat truma. Maybe she's mugureshes. Why? What happened to chez kaz chai? That's what Rava had said. And we had handled that back and forth, different approaches that were wrong. And Rava says, there's a big difference between Cheskas Chai presently versus Cheskas Chai in the future. We're not worried that he's already, we're not concerned he's already dead. Chazaka works for that. We do have to be concerned positively that he might die within the next 60 minutes. Because Chazaka apparently does not work to predict the future. That's Nafki number 5. Nafki number 4 was Chazaka only can build off of prior practical knowledge, as to be real-time data in the past that we're building a Chazaka from. It's been a Sbarak Shaita. And it can only land in the present. Cannot take me into the future. It's a hanaga. It's not actually dealing with facts, so it can be artificially limited. Those are the artificial limits that the Torah imposes on Chazaka. Okay. Now let's come back to the core. This Gemara. So what's this Gemara saying? So now let's work backwards. We had said the first nafkamina was with the approach of Reb Shimon, you understand, Ruba Chazaka, Ruba Adir beautifully. That's the end of the Gemara. So let's now work backwards. Let's work logically. Right? Chachamim say, Ruba Chazaka, Ruba Adir. Why? Zot Reb Shimon, Shar Beis, Perek Beis, because Rov is a Mavar. Chazaka is merely a Hanhaga. Chazaka tells me what to do when I don't know what the facts are. Rov tells me, here are the facts. Those are the facts. It's the best, it's evidence. Not perfect. Two Adim can override a rove, but rove is a degree of evidence. It tells me here are the facts. The subject is fundamentally gone. There's no room for a chazaka. Where did the Gemara say that? The Gemara said that apparently, working backward, what did Gemara say? What's their explanation for chazaka ruba adif? What were the three word explanation the Gemara gave for chachamim? Look inside. Kiddushin that pay him off. Miyuta kamanda leisa. Miyuta kamanda, I'm sorry, forward explanation. Miyuta kamanda, that's why you throw it up. I'm sorry. Miyuta kamanda leisa dami. The miyut is as though it isn't. I mean, of course there is a miyut. In other words, the miyut, it's as though there's no miyut, means we consider this to be fact. 80% chances that the kid touched it, we consider that fact. A poetic way of saying that is as though the miyut doesn't exist. The rove is mevara. So that's it. The kid touched it. Until we have better evidence to the contrary, we will assume factually the kid touched it. We're ignoring the miyut. Miyut, come on, delays it. Gorgeous. So now we begin to understand the Gemara's poetry. Now with that, let's now move back a step. What was Rameir saying? Rameir was disagreeing. Rameir was saying we don't say ruach hazaka ruach hadif. Why? We don't ignore the miyut, right? The miyut is there. You put the miyut next to the chazaka. You put the miyut next to the chazaka. Meaning, you have to command the isei dami. But Meir holds the miyut. If you have to contend with the miyut, when you have to contend, of course the miyut exists. Of course there are 20% of kids that don't touch stuff. No, meaning that's the opposite of what the Chachamim said. Chachamim said we ignore the miyut, meaning we consider rov to be a mivara. But Meir apparently says, no, Rob is not a Mavar. What facts? I mean, 80% of kids do this, and 20% of kids don't. There could be a rule. You can't tell me, I know. What do you know? 20% chance it's wrong. So, Chachamim, in other words, let's translate that. Chachamim hold Rove is a Mevara, while Chazaka is merely a Hanhaga. Meir is not going to disagree about Chazaka, he does disagree about Rove. He says, no, Rove is also merely a Hanhaga. It's a rule. It's a rule of thumb. If 60%, 80% say are like X, so consider as though it's X. It's not actually, a beer of Yetzias. After all, 20% are the other way, 40% are the other way. So Meir holds that Rove is also a mere Hanhaga. That's Smoch Miut L'Chazaka. So that's why he says there's room to say that Chazaka wins. There's room to say Chazaka wins because when you put the existence of a miyud, the fact that it's not 100%, so that's what punches a hole in the robe. It's not a beer, it's just a robe. So Chazaka is also a robe. And I would add, the Gemara earlier in Masechet, getting the very beginning of getting, where the Gemara seems to say that the Gemara seems to say that even Remeir sometimes agrees that Ruba Vachazaka Ruba Adif, if it's a really, really, really strong row. If it's 60% row, 80% row, 90% row, Remeir says, I mean, probably it's like this, but maybe it's like that. That's not fact. It's just the Torah has a rule. A rule, you follow a rule. Look, a rule, you follow Chazaka. But Remeir does agree that if it's an extraordinary rove, numerically extraordinary rove, not 60%, 80%, 90%, but like 99%, that's what we call the miut against it is the mere miuta de miuta. It's a miut of a miut, tiny miut. And then already even Remeir agrees that that's already a hero. I mean, nothing's for sure, but how many things go for sure? 99% certainty that even Remeir agrees to the concept that Rove could be, if there's a halachic margin of error. And if there's a strong enough Rove, then for sure, that considers to be Mavar. It's just that Remeir's threshold, his standard, for what numbers you need to be considered not merely a hanhaga, but a beer, are much, much higher. So that, number one, what we just accomplished is a few things. Now we began by very briefly reviewing the five nafkaminas in this notion of rov be a beer, machazaka the hanhaga. And number two, we took that and used it to read the Gemara Kiddush Nafpei with new eyes and to now arrive at an internal understanding of what the Gemara Svaras are for both Remeir and the Chachamim, and to appreciate what the Gemara appears to be saying is that Remeir and the Chachamim are arguing over how you view Rove. Do you indeed view Rove as a zero or not? And then we added another element, and this is we could spend a lot of time on. And that is that rove come, not all roves are created equal. As we just sort of touched on, that 51% is a rove and 99.9% is a rove. And they both are roves, but they don't necessarily have the same strength. Even if 51% has at least some impact, sure, you have a base in of 71, and if you have a 32-29 decision to convict someone as a Navi HaSheker by the Beis Din of Shem V'Yachas, he's Chayav Misa. And 32 out of 71, that's less than 60%, right? 37 to 34 row is enough to convict someone as a Navi HaSheker. 37 out of 71, that's not an incredibly strong row. So row does work even when it's minimal, sometimes. But the better the numbers, the more effective it is. Rav Schechter has, maybe we'll get to some other time, I don't want to get into it in great depth now. Rav Schechter has a gorgeous article, it's actually in the middle of his tshuva about the kashrus of canned tuna fish. He develops several major sugyas in figuring out whether or not you need Bishul Yisrael on canned tuna fish. So one of the major shas issues that he develops is this idea that halacha recognizes five different levels of rov. That we divide, you know, from above 50% up until 100% is now all the same. We divide it to five different intervals, and each one has its own rules and regulations. Right. So most of the rovs we've been talking about until now are probably in level two. It's already a healthy rov, a rov bari. It's already a mevarer, but doesn't necessarily have all the bells and whistles. I'll give you a simple example. Gemara, what was the most common rogue that we heard about on Daf Yud Aleph Maseches Chulin? What was the most common rogue that we heard about on Daf Yud Aleph Maseches Chulin? Right, very good. Abe says, right, rogue animals, rogue people are, if they look healthy on the outside, they're probably not trait. Right? Now, why did the Gemara kept saying, and therefore you'll assume, without looking, that's not treifa. I can assume the carbonola is not treifa. I'll assume the carbon pesach is not treifa. I'll assume the pardula is not treifa. I'll assume the almost victim of the Edom Zomen not a treifa. I'll assume that the homicide victim was not a treifa before the murderer violently attacked him. And yet, how many people have ever been at a shechita? Even in a shlachta is a demonstration. So what do they say? They check the knife carefully, and they shech. And what do they do after the shech? What do they do after the shech? They check it's a treifa. Right. I thought we have a rove. What are you checking? Why are you bothering to check if it's a treifa?
Extra
probe.
You know
and now let me turn the question around the other way. Are you sure we check if it's a treifa? Well, we do. A little bit. We learned that only do they crack open the skull to check the dura to see if the membrane over the crumichal moloch is punctured?
Is it really strong?
No. Nice try.
Not
okay. Okay. I'm happy to be the Halavaya should be as firm as the Ramban. But Ramban points out, Ramban quotes beginning of the Shulin, that this is already ancient practice. We check the lungs, but not the rest of the animal. Unless there's evidence otherwise. If the animal looks damaged, the animal looks injured, then you're going to have to do a more thorough investigation. But the animal looks, external, just observation, before we check the animal, look on the outside perfectly healthy, we do check the lungs, we don't check anything else. Now, which one is it? Which one is it?
Could it be that when the animal's look healthy, the rogue,
you're onto something there, right?
Not, but
it can't be, you're onto something that the numbers are different with lungs. Absolutely. But now let me push back. You're saying good, say better. Because if rove animals, healthy looking animals, had trachomas in the lungs, then what are you going to do with Parah Aduma? What are you going to do with Edom Zomen? Right? We said rove people and animals have no trachomas whatsoever. Yet you're onto something.
Not as much for rove.
So apparently, rove animals have no trachomas whatsoever, even of the lungs. Even the lungs, the majority of animals don't have trachomas of the lungs. But the rove of animals that don't have non-lung trachomas, to say most animals don't have a trachoma in the heart. Most animals are missing their liver. Most animals don't have like a perforated esophagus or trachea or something like that. That's not just 80% of animals. That's like 97%. That's a very high, it's a level 3, level 4 rove. So much so, not only is it a good rove, it's a mevarer, but even a level 3 rove, you don't even have to check, even if you can. While the trachomas in the lungs, most animals don't have a trachomas in the lungs, but 10% or so do. So that already is what we call a miyud hamatza. It's a level 2 rove. It's a solid rove. It's a mevarer. But there is a significant miyud against it. Where does that leave me? It's a beautiful row. But if I could check, I should. That's already your level three. Level three row, right? The above 90%, I'm not even mechuyev to check. You can begin to think of it sort of like this.
Amen. Eat.
Level two row, that's what the Gemara calls a row of bari, a healthy row. We would call that, that's already the bari. Level three.
It's between 50 and 90?
No.
What are the exact numbers?
There are Gemaras that indicate elsewhere, Gemara began with Sachim Psachim, that Ruben Chazaka wins.
That's what Meir says.
Well, yeah, except that those Gemaras are not Rebbeim. Those Gemaras instead are talking about a very weak rogue, a rogue by rogue, every level one. Once you get to, let's say, 70% or so, they're probably in healthy rogue land, that's where it's a Mavar. Once you pass the level, the 90% mark, not only it's so strong, you don't have a Nir HaMatzuri, a level three rogue, you ain't no Saref Lidra. Even if you could check, I'll give you a practical application for the Kohanim in the room, myself included. Pashas says that a Kohen is not permitted to fly on an airplane together with a corpse. So our post to our Mekel, depending on what the corpse is packaged in, what sort of, sometimes they put some sort of packaging around the coffin. Some posts can think that mitigates the problem of Tumas makes. And many assume that is still problematic. So if I'm flying from New York to Seattle, probably okay. Let's say I'm flying from New York to Tel Aviv. What's it in? Now, maybe there's a mace on the plane, and there's no mace on the plane. Okay. So the answer is, well, row flights, if that's true, that rogue, I am quite certain that rogue flights from New York to Seattle are not carrying me. Rogue flights from New York to Tel Aviv, well, maybe rogue flights from New York to Tel Aviv aren't carrying Mason. But rogue non-stop flights from JFK to Tel Aviv, maybe rogue aren't carrying Mason, but more than 10% for sure are. Certainly late afternoon and night flights, non-stop JFK to Tel Aviv, more than 10% are carrying Mason. So that would mean if I want to take that type of flight, I might have a level 2, well, level 1, level 2 row, but I don't have a level 3. I'm under 90%. Which means that you're going to follow the post to assume that that's the problem. So what's going on? I need to check. If it's checkable, I need to check. If it's uncheckable, rely on the row. Right? I don't check the lungs of the cow, dairy cow, before I milk it, because I can check, because it's alive. So I have a robe, a lower level robe, that's fine. But once I shecht it, I have the ability to check lungs, I better check. Well, I could show up to the airport and ask the people at the desk, is there a family bringing a corpse for burial on the plane? Don't tell me. If I'm traveling with my whole family, it's going to be sort of hard, you know, to turn on the spot and wait another 6 hours for the next flight. So if you're a Kohen, you can either choose to ask questions, because it's only level 2 row, or make sure you pick a flight with a level 3 row. Make sure you pick a flight where there are less than 10% chances of carrying Mason. So for instance, if I take an early afternoon flight, those, just timing-wise, those rarely carry Mason. Flights out of LaGuardia rarely carry Mason. Stopovers almost never carry Mason. Let's say I fly through Zurich. So it's very, it would be typically very irresponsible and just inefficient to send a mace on a stopover carrying to Israel for obvious reasons. You'll tell me, but the second half of the flight, so from New York to Zurich, I'm fine. I'll go from Zurich to Tel Aviv. So it could be there's a Swiss family that's sending a mace, Rahman Salon, from Zurich to Tel Aviv. It's possible. But the Zurich Jewish community is much smaller than the New York Jewish community. So it happens occasionally, but the percentage of flights, Swiss Air flights from Zurich to Tel Aviv, that kind of mace in, is far less than 10%. So now I'm already, that means I have a rove well over 90%. I am safe. Yeah, a number, a lot of tens. I would love to take questions. Yes, we're working on it.
Is there
any holding Rabbi Meir? No. Rabbi Meir, good question. See, the idea is like this. Rabbi Meir would kick in somewhere over here. It's a level 4 rove. There, even Rav Meir agrees that it's a beer. We say, no, it's already a beer. It's already a beer. You're saying it's a beer, why do I have to check?
Right.
So Jordan asks, well, it's already a beer, why do I have to check? So the answer is, well, as we said before, when it comes to, in the world of Beirurim, there are different degrees of beer. Just like two of them are, perhaps, a good analogy might be two of them are stronger than one. Is Xeris HaKasim that three Eidim are not stronger than two Eidim. We see two Eidim as the gold standard of beer, and whereas based on Adrasha, you have five Eidim, 10 Eidim, 100 Eidim versus two Eidim, Alpidin, the level is off. You reach a certain maximum level of beer and hit two Eidim, adding more people doesn't matter. But up until that point, there'd be greater or lesser degrees of evidence, and if we turn into it. We Hadam HaFachadim, the level two Rov is already a beer, but obviously the stronger it gets, the better it is. So it's a beer, but Lamasa, if you, it's on a minimal beer, so if you could check, you really ought to. Either Minatar or Jabbanon, if you could check, you ought to. Once Ray gets beyond 90%, level 3 row, that's a stronger beer, not Mechayiv to check, even if you could, not Mechayiv to check.
So it's not that Rabbi Meir and about how strong a rove has to be for it not to check.
Correct. Jordan's right. It's a question where you draw. Everyone agrees that a 51% rove is just didn't actually tell me anything. That has been a discussion in the aftermath. That's been a point made by the loser, regardless of party, in the last couple of presidential elections. You only won by such a slim margin. It doesn't actually say anything. Fair. It's a rule. It's a hanaga. The rule is whoever gets the rove wins. It doesn't tell me that clearly the country wants X. Right? That 51% rove is a hanaga. And everyone agrees that 99.99% rove is a beer. And the question is, but in the vast middle, where you draw a line? The Chum draw a line much lower. The Mayor draws a line very high. So in terms of the vast middle, so Rechacham holds those are Beirurim. Your typical roves are Beirurim. And Rechacham holds typical roves are not Beirurim. But everyone agrees that on the edges, on the extremes, everyone's going to agree. Yeah?
At what point would you say that if you're not able to check, you can't rely on a rove? Is it like if something was 51% and you're not
and
able to
anything under 90%, the 90% number, by the way, is the Mishnah Zakhar. The Mishnah Zakhar is the Talmud of the Chaim of the Lashon. From the early days of Lashon Shiva, the early 1800s, and as Shiva said, Mishnas Yaakov, he tries to develop based on Gemara deep into Bava Basra that the percentage, that number, where you say you don't no longer have to check. What's the number? The Min Hamatzah is 10%.
Under 90%, you would always have to check.
If it's relatively simple to check, you're not going to check.
But let's say you can't. Can you guys still get on?
No, so that's the Gemara. If you can't, we drink milk from calves without checking the lungs.
So if it's
because we can't check.
So if it's 51%, can you still rely on the rove? Or
yeah.
How low does it get?
51%. But when you get down to in the 50s and maybe the 60s, it's a rove. It works. But there, it's merely a hanaga, and that's why the Gemara says that a very weak rove. Everyone agrees that a very weak rove can lose to a chazan. Because then the whole lumpus of it's a beer versus an hanaga, that breaks down over here. That starts here. It starts level 2. Yeah, work your way around the room. Sammy? Yoni?
What's the definition of uncheckable?
What's the definition of?
Uncheckable.
Uncheckable. Iyavsha, I think the language of post-communism, Iyavsha lived out in Kal. So, yes, now that we do have CAT scans, we do have MRIs, and one or the other or both could probably successfully check your dairy cows for the lungs of your dairy cows to see whether they have serfus or not, but that's not mukhayf to do that. That's really above and beyond. But if it's a relatively straightforward, let's say the guidelines for checking vegetables and berries for koloid is also based on this 10% doctrine. And what we're trying to do is, if you can clean the bugs enough, clean the vegetables sufficient to the point that if I have a sample of vegetables and I know that this species of vegetable growing in this place that went through this cleaning process, 90% of the time has no bugs. So then I don't have to even look. Right? That's a coleslaw. A bag of coleslaw, a washed coleslaw, again in the supermarket, could occasionally have bugs. Very rare. So that's it. I don't even have to bother checking. I get a bag of lettuce. I get a bag of green leaf lettuce. So then already you may have to do some. You may have to do more beer. But you have to take it because more than 10% will have bugs. And if it was growing in the sand, less so. Yeah. Eight. I'm sorry? Yeah, that's a whole separate question about the flight patterns over a cemetery. It's a separate issue. But I'm talking about the mace that's on the place. Unrelated. That's probably not a rogue question either. That's a separate conversation. Yeah?
I have two questions.
Pick one.
Okay.
Only because I'm glad to take any questions you have, but not at the moment.
So, just because Rabbi Meir sees this robe isn't so strong, it's on Haga, why is it now that having this Mews and Chazaka together with the robe, just because he sees the robe as on Haga?
Yes, you're asking during the language of the Gemara in Kiddushin HaFeh, Smoch Mews or Chazaka. The Gemara is trying to visually depict this idea. In other words, you put the Mews, ignore the Mews. Ignore the Mews means we see the robe as a Mabar, we see it as fact. The halacha allows us, it's a margin of error. So we ignore the 20%. The mayor says, no, the 20% is chayav v'kayav. Of course, there is a 20%. I mean, the 20% is halachically in play. In other words, the rule is a rule. But it's merely a rule. We recognize the fact that it may be X or it may be Y. It's not a mevar or anything. The mute is still there as a real possibility. So you put that, the fact that miuta means the fact that the robe is not a birur, you put that together with the fact that you have a chazaka, on the other side you don't have a birur, you have merely a hanaka, because this miut means that robe is out. So that's why the chazaka comes in. Chazaka, hanaka, chazaka takes precedence over the hanaka of robe.
But they're both, what makes
Chazaka
now? If they're both on
a
hug level,
none of
them.
What told Rabbeinu that Chazaka is stronger?
No, why
I'm not sure. Chazaka? Yeah, why should they be conflict? Yes, how do Rabbeinu know the Chazaka is that? I'm not sure. It's a good question. But we know why that it's conceivable. We know why it's an option. Right. It's an option because Rabbeinu is not a good. Yeah.
Why
did
Rabbeinu not use it to check
people if
they're
not social? Because I have a key. If I have a row with a Nira Matsui, then I have a chiyuv. Either in a Torah Rabban, I have a chiyuv to check rather than a rule on the row. And if I have a stronger row, Torah level, there's no Nira Matsui, Torah level 3 row, then I don't have a chiyuv to check whatsoever. I have the right to rely on the row even if I could do direct observation. If I have a level 2 row, I have the right to rely on the row if I have no better Bir Habitsiris Mitsiris available. But if I have a better way of determining that, I should rely on a superior evidence.
How does your needs determine?
No, in other words, the fact that we rely on rogues exerts on us. The fact that we see this as a halachic margin error, that's exerts. The Torah tells me this constitutes sufficient evidence. So here the Torah says, look, this is minimal evidence. You have the right to rely on that evidence in the absence of anything better. But if there is the option for better evidence, you need to seek better evidence, which will either tell you yes or no. But once you get beyond the 90% mark, then anyway, it's not just you can rely on this in the absence of better evidence, you can rely on this. This is quality evidence. Chris? No? No? No, 20% of cows have a trachis in the lung. 15% of cows have a trachis in the lung. 3%, let's make up numbers. 3% of cows have a trachis in the esophagus. 2% of cows have a trachis in the stomach. And we can break down the data. Remember, when you're dealing with Rove, it's not, you're actually dealing with data. So I can break it down as much as I can. So I know that 15% of 85% of cows don't have a trachis in the lungs. They're great. Great. That's a nice rove. It's a rove I can rely on in the absence of better evidence. But if but now the cow is dead and I could, with relative ease, you know, do a dissection, major dissection, pull out the lungs, which you're doing anyways, and either stick them in water or blow into them and see if they're, or do a visual inspection, whatever you're going to do, so then you don't have the right to rely on the 85% rove. If I have a 97% rove, a 98% rove, then the esophagus is fine. So then, I don't have to bother looking. It's right there. It's there on the table. You don't have to bother. If you look and you see there's a hole, okay, so now you know. But I have the right to rely on 98% rove. I like to flip the check. Yeah, sure. Sure. That's the way it always works with the rove. Just as I would break it down to the smallest category. In other words, if there are wounds on the outside of the animal, then I'm not going to say, oh, 85% of animals in the trachis lung. Well, I don't know. 85% of animals that look normal and look healthy outside. But an animal that has a particular pattern of wounds, maybe only 60% have no trachis. Maybe only 40% have no trachis. I always say, I think you need to break it down with as much data as you have. Again, because rove is data driven, unlike chazaka, which is not. Yeah. Okay. Last question. This is Jermaine.
Would I be able to create a chazaka based on a rove? Meaning, one of our non-communities about chazaka is that you can't build a chazaka off of, you have to build a chazaka off of the previous practical knowledge that you have. Right? And you can continue to act as you have been acting before. So if I know that rove paradumas are not trefa, right? And so at 6 months, I'm assuming that this paradigm is not a trefa. So at a year and a half, I should be able to assume that that paradigm is not a trefa based on the chazaka of the rove that I
That's
have.
Interesting. Maybe. I'm not sure. But in that case, but if you're asking why I'm supposed to say that, so for two reasons. Number one, in our case, the rove itself endures. You don't need the chazaka to make it to extend into future. There also is a rove that's a six-year-old cow, probably not trefus. There's also a rove that 18-month cows and 30-month cows are not trefus, number one. Number two, what Tosis is trying to accomplish in Akasha was to see if we can work this out without any reference to rove whatsoever. So that's the whole point is, can we explain that? Do we need rove to explain this parsha in the Torah or not? The Gemara is contending that we need rove to explain this parsha in the Torah, and therefore this parsha in the Torah is a mucker for rove. So the Torah is trying to figure out, well, maybe I can make sense of this parsha without any reference to rove. So to say, well, I have a chazaka built up of a rove wouldn't have accomplished what Tosis is trying to accomplish, which was to explain Parah Aduma in a rove-free way. To explain Edom Zomim in a rove-free way. That's an interesting question. I'm not sure. I'm sure there's discussion posted about that. You know, let's say there's a rove about 6 months old. There is not a rove about 18 months old. 18 months old are unknown. Can you have a chazaka built off of a rove? Probably. I'm not sure. Probably a thesis. I'm sorry?
The paradigma wouldn't have to be at least 2 years old.
Yeah, but that's irrelevant for Tosis. What Tosis is trying to do is to construct an explanation that doesn't reference rove. What's referencing rove? I don't even need chazak at all. I have rove right now too. The rove, I don't need a diatonic, two points in time system. I have a systonic right now.
Once you get there,
No, yeah, different numbers, different p-values, different degrees of probability. It makes you not happy. The stronger the chances.
Well, 51% is row 1 and not row 2, but it's 60% row 1.
So at some point, probably around 60-70%, maybe 75, we make is a cut to row 2, and then according to Mishnah Zakeh, about 90% is the dividing line between 2 and 3. And we got to figure out 98, probably around 98 or so, maybe 99 is the cut between 3 and 4. And then the fifth one, the Chasam Sofer has an Tshuva, one out of 1,000, thinks is relevant, maybe relevant. Rove comes up a lot in terms of risk management, both in terms of secular risk management and Bahavdil, a lot of risk management. If you have any future actuaries here, and then you're trying to think about, can I engage in this activity? Base jumping is clearly Keneged Adin, because you don't have the roves you need for it to be safe. But every activity has some degree of risk. So clearly at some point we say there's a rove that it's safe, and that allows me to do it. So the question is, well, what type of rove do you need? And are there other factors besides just the raw number? Maybe it's social acceptability, maybe it's my personal degree of comfort. The sources and posting that both of those are relevant factors, and also the numbers. And this comes up in everyday situations, like crossing the street. And it comes up in high stakes, I mean, all of them are high stakes situations. These are the very obvious, emotionally laden situations. It's like a person is an individual is suffering from a condition that will probably terminate his life in X number of months, in a year, in a year and a half. Now there's a new procedure, experimental procedure, that will probably save him and give him decades of life, but it may also, there's a certain chance that it will end his life much more quickly. So how do you make that call? And you go aggressive or you go conservative? So that's a very, very serious question. And one of the factors is weighing the numbers. One of the factors is, What are the rove's strengths on different sides? What are the chances that the procedure will be successful? And do you weight that number by how much you gain? You multiply. These are as well as looking at how much the patient is willing to accept the risk. So these are the way we started talking about this. I mentioned that once your eyes are open to the Torah's HaSfeka's dimension of halacha, you can see it everywhere. It's not consigned to any one mesechta or sugya. It comes up all the time, everywhere. You can start seeing it again and again and again. Some of you saw a lick of another rove sugya, which really is our rove sugya. My original vision had been to go from the sugya of the general Rove and Chazaka, an appreciation of how Rove works and how Torah Sasekis works, to then take the next step into Rove in the context of Dini Mamas. Ein Hocho Mamanach HaRove, which is a detail within the world of Hamotzi Mechaver Al Barai. How you deal with Suffolk in the world of Dini Mamas, which I mentioned the first day of Shir, is a remarkable introduction to Nashman Ezekin in general. Rove and Chazaka Bechlal, Torah Sasekis is a in many ways, a very powerful introduction to Nashim Zikin, and Hamotzi Mechaver Al Barai in particular, gets us thinking about that. You saw it a little bit in the Kiyas, the Gina Perek HaMiniach. It comes up even more centrally in Daf Mem Vav Amud Aleph. So the truth is, we have two paths ahead of us. Because when we come back from Yom Tov, we can either go with option one, or option two. If you either go with Mamish to continue, okay, now we're up to Hamotzi Mechaver Al Barai, we'll come back after Yom Tov and dive into Daf Mem Vav and work through the Sugya Hamotzi Mechaver Al Barai, and then go back to Bava Kamma that base and go straight from there. Or to keep the other half of the original plan, which was to come back to Yom Tov, to start Bava Kamma Daf base. Okay? And we had a chance to talk a little bit. You raised Hamotzi Mechaver Al Barai a little bit over the course of the beginning of Perek HaMiniach. You had a general introduction to the world of Torah Sasekis, and to the sort of thinking that goes on, and it'll come up as things unfold. So I'll tell you, my personal natiya is I've been going back and forth a lot personally in terms of which I think I'm excited about both. Selfishly, I'm excited about both. In terms of what I think is better limud for the chevra, I've been going back and forth in my mind a lot. Where to start after Yom Tov? My natiya is to say after Yom Tov and Uzman, we start with Daf Beis. And if we get to Amat Chavarai later in the year, we'll get to it later in the year. I am certainly open to your thoughts, suggestions, feelings.